We're continuing on in our Upside Down Kingdom series this week and next week, and then we'll be finished. I've really enjoyed doing it. I think some of the messages have been quite challenging and really seem like it's hard to live out because we're not used to doing it. And very much Jesus' way is actually the right way up. And the more we hear his way, the more it does challenge us. But we see that he knows best the more we hear him and start to live out his way. Tonight is one of the most upside down parts of the Bible. It's really quite amazing that to start with, that an angel would come to Mary and announce something. Has anyone here ever had an angel announcement? No? This is a bit upside down. So maybe it's not upside down, but it's rare, right? It's only times in the biblical story that God really wants to say something that an angel appears. So maybe to Joshua when he was about to go off into the promised land, an angel appeared to him. An angel appeared before Balaam's donkey to stop it. There's that story. Isaiah, when he got his calling to say some tremendously hard things to the people of Israel, again, he saw the angel, and the angel gave a message. It's a really amazing time. And so here we have the angel appearing, saying, "Greetings, you who are highly favoured, the Lord is with you." That's a pretty good greeting if you're going to receive one from an angel. I recall hearing this guy speak. It was in 1995, and I went up to Sutherland for a conference, and this guy was saying how he had longed to see an angel. And so he went out to his car and he was praying through the middle of the night, "Lord, show me an angel. Show me this angel." He was pouring out his heart. And the next thing he knows, there's this flash of white, a person in a white robe, and it startled him. He's like, "Ah!" And it turns out it was his wife in her dressing gown come out to see if he was okay. But then he decided, actually, I don't need to see an angel, because most of the time when people encounter angels, they are actually afraid. So it's not something that we want. But one of the reasons why angels are sent, they're sent to bring a message. That's the basic meaning of angel. It's angelos, which really means messenger. But some of these messengers have with them this sort of awe that makes people know that the message really is for God. And particularly for Mary, to have an angel appear so that you know that the times ahead that are going to be tough are not just, you know, something that I've made up in my head. These experiences are so real that I know I can endure the hard things that are coming. And for Mary, it would have been hard to say yes, because she would have been ridiculed, she could have been ostracized, she could have even been killed, because she was betrothed to be married. And at that point, if you commit adultery after you've been betrothed, there's a year from the start till the wedding. If you commit adultery in that time, you can be stoned. So there was a risk. But yet she was willing to say, "May it be as you've said." Just amazing. And this is a bit upside down. One of the other things about Mary is she wasn't sitting there at home thinking, "Right, the Messiah's got to come one day. Maybe it's me." She went and sit by the phone. Oh, they didn't have phones. Maybe she was sitting by a window. "Lord, send me an angel. Tell me that it's me." People weren't expecting that the Messiah would be born by a virgin either. So she wasn't saying, "Pick me, pick me." But yet, God did pick her, because she had something about her faithfulness to God, whether it was her purity or just her wanting to honour God with her whole life, we don't know. but we do know that she was highly favoured. And God chose someone who was low, so to speak, had no power, had no status, in fact was almost on the edge of powerlessness by becoming pregnant, that God chose her. It's just amazing. It's very, very upside down. I know a lot of the teenagers, and it would have been a young teenager. Can you imagine a 12 or 13-year-old girl now having responsibility for the most important baby ever? One of our teenagers now. It's a different world. But Mary was special. Absolutely amazing. At the end, after the angel explained, you're going to have, you know, this amazing gift from the Father, a descendant of the Father, David, and the kingdom will never end. She says, how can this be? The most obvious thing is, for I am a virgin. And no doubt she would have had this book read to her by her parents. The amazing true story of how babies are made. Like, she knows, how can this be? I've had this talk. So that's the most base part of this. How can this be? Like, you're saying that this is going to happen, but I'm not married yet. I'm betrothed, but I'm not married. How? She wasn't saying, like, how can it be, but how will it be? She's not saying, well, this can't happen, but she's like, how will this happen? I can't see how this will happen. I reckon there might have also been a bit more surprise than just I'm a virgin, but also the fact that God's chose her to bear this promised Messiah would have been a bit like, how? Me? Amazing. How can this be? It would have been a real surprise, and yet the angel says that God will overshadow you and the Most High will come over, almost like the hovering of God over the waters at the beginning of creation. And this is really an important thing that God broke in, and I'll get to it at the end of the sermon again. I'll tuck back into this point that by God breaking in again and being born of Mary and not of a man, it's that Adam's line is broken. And then a second Adam would come who could bring salvation from the broken first. But it's very interesting as well that in the New Testament, the scriptures aren't really making a big deal about this virgin birth. I mean, if this miracle happened, you would think that they'd be going, he was born of a virgin. Like, this is the biggest miracle ever. But they actually don't make a big deal of it. There's this recorded in Luke, it's recorded in Matthew, but that's it. And it doesn't actually name it in Matthew, but it says that Joseph wanted to put her away quietly. So the implication is absolutely there that she became pregnant while she was still a virgin. And also in Matthew, there's a quote back to Isaiah chapter 7 where it talks about the virgin will be with child and you'll call him Emmanuel, God with us. Now, it's very interesting that that verse from Isaiah, when it was first read, it probably can be translated, the young maiden will be with child. So it could be just that, like, the one who's just come of age is a child. But now as we look back, actually this prophecy is so amazing. And the early church picked up on this one from Isaiah, that the virgin will give birth and the son will be God with us, the name Emmanuel. So the names, I'm going to come back in a moment again to the names, but I'm going to take a different track just for a moment. That some of the things that the angel said to Mary are quite amazing. So the Lord will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over Jacob's descendants forever. His kingdom will never end. I need to do a better job of explaining tonight than I did this morning. We had my old foster daughter came to church today. Praise God. It's just amazing. I haven't seen her for 10 years. Anyway, she said, I never knew that God's name was David. because Jesus is the Son of God, and it's saying the throne of your father David. And she's like, oh, I didn't know that God's name was David. But the father David is the link between David was the greatest king of Israel. David was the one whom had a heart after God's own heart. David wasn't perfect, but nonetheless, it was promised to David that he would have one of his descendants on the throne forever. God, even with David's failings, loved him and said, it's like he's my son, so to speak, in that I'm in with this guy. He represents me well. And so this promise was made to David that one of your descendants will sit on the throne forever. So the father David is one of that promise to David way back. Jesus is sitting in this. He's sitting in the shadow. And also the reign of Jacob's descendants. Jacob, again, was one of the patriarchs that God loved. And his kingdom will never end. That was, again, the promise to David that he would have one of his descendants sitting on the throne forever. Now, they probably just thought originally that different descendants would sit, that there would always be someone to replace. But here, it's actually saying something much stronger, that to Jesus, this baby, his kingdom's going to keep going, which that's a pretty big call, really, isn't it? Big call. Does anyone here remember the 2000 Olympics? Yep, a few do. Please don't not like me for a moment when I tell this story, but I'll redeem myself. It's exciting, the opening ceremony, watched every moment. And I'm like, who's going to do this? Bring the torch. Who's going to bring the torch? And then all of a sudden, there's Kathy Freeman in a space suit thing, and I'm like, what? Not her. How can... Oh, and I didn't like Kathy Freeman much but at the time. And I'm like, what? It's just a terrible choice. And I was lamenting later to my friend, what a terrible choice. How could they pick her? And one of my friends stopped me and he said, hang on, I think it's the best choice. And I'm like, what? Why? And he's like, well, don't you know the history of our country? And I'm like, yeah. Don't you know that the Aboriginal people have been run over? Don't you know that they've been ashamed and just treated badly? And so for us, when the whole world is watching, to put forward one of our first peoples as our representative and point person, this is the most fitting thing. And I'm like, yeah, it is. Because I had the whole story. I was able to see much better. And in this New Testament reading that we have, that is still on the screen now, about the father David, we've got to have the backstory of Israel for Jesus to really make sense. Without it, Jesus is a baby that has mystery around him, but there's so much more. There's a big story attached to Jesus of Nazareth. And without that big story, the story actually falls apart. So if anyone ever tells you, oh, you don't worry about the Old Testament, be very careful. The Old Testament is so important to give us the whole background of Jesus and who he is and who he thought himself to be. The background is so very important. So I'm going to take us back now to the other Bible reading we had. So the father David was talked about, but then there were also promises about the one who would come to be the Messiah or the King, the one who would be David's descendant. And so I'm going to stop on Isaiah chapter 9 for a little while now. This is part of the bigger story. And it doesn't start very well, Isaiah chapter 9. Nevertheless, there'll be no more gloom for those who were in distress. In the past, he humbled the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. But in the future, he will honour Galilee of the nations by the way of the sea beyond the Jordan. So, just want to show you where this is.
So up here is the land of Zebulun. Up here is the tribe of Naphtali. And all this region really is Galilee.
So if you remember last year, for those who were here, we had the God's Big Story series. And we talked about the exile. That's annoying. I'm going to have to do something about that. Air conditioning blowing my notes. Can you grab the thing and turn it off for me, Cindy, actually? There'll be a remote around there. Yeah.
So we remember in the exile, the first part of the exile, this whole part of Israel, a whole heap of the tribes,
got absolutely decimated by the Assyrians. So they came in and just smashed people and then took a whole lot of people back to Babylon.
And so all these tribes up here
were in ruins. They were ashamed, so to speak. They were not looked on with favour. As it said in this passage, there's gloom, and this passage is saying there will be no more gloom, but at the moment there is. There'll be no more distress, and at the moment there is. In the past, this land's been humbled, but in the future. So part attached to this prophecy about the Messiah, there's some beautiful things that are coming to these lands that have seen destruction, that have seen exile.
What are some of the things? Well, the people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned.
This Isaiah passage is saying that when this Messiah comes, those who have been exiled, those who are living away from God, will actually return, that they'll have the light of God's presence with them again. At Jesus' time, even though the people were back in the land, the people of Israel back in the land, there was still this general idea that even though they'd come back, they hadn't really returned from exile spiritually. And they were still waiting the full return with God's presence really right back in with the people and them being fully restored. This Isaiah passage is one of the things that they're waiting for, that the Messiah would do. Restore to light from darkness. To bring people out of despair. One of the other things, every warrior's boot used in battle and every garment rolled in blood will be destined for burning, will be fuel for the fire. Really meaning that any memory of the destruction will be gone. All the blood that had been spilt, the way that they were destroyed, the memory of that will be wiped away when this child we see. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given. So much is wrapped up in this child for the Messiah. And the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of his government and peace there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time and forever. The zeal of the Lord will accomplish this. I just want to ask a few questions. Well,
first of all, I want to tell you that my name's Trevor. And I was told a few years ago from one of those names, you know, when you look up what your name means in a book. Apparently my name means wisdom.
My parents got that wrong, right? Does anyone here know of what your name means? It means
white wave.
White wave. That's good.
Anyone else?
Yep.
Matthew means gift from God.
Matthew means gift from God. Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? Yep.
In Japanese, Naomi means obedience and beauty. I think I got the first one wrong.
Yep.
Good one. Gordon?
Upright.
Okay, so our names point to something. Our names really point to something. And out of this passage, I just wanted to sort of give this passage back to its old heritage, but then take it back to what we already think about this passage. Because as Christians, we look at these passages back at the prophecy of Jesus and just go, oh, that points to him. But to start with, when before Jesus, people would have looked at this passage and not thought, oh, great, the Messiah is going to be our counsellor, the Messiah is going to be mighty God, the Messiah is going to be everlasting Father, the Messiah is going to be Prince of Peace. That's not what they would have thought. But rather, like my name points to wisdom, like Christopher's name is Christ Bearer, like Catherine's name is Pure One, our names are meant to, at times, point us to something greater. And what was meant by these names in the Old Testament was that when the people would look at this Messiah or hear their name called, they would remember that God is the wonderful counsellor, that God is mighty, that he is the everlasting Father, and that he is the Prince of Peace. So the name was meant to be a springboard, like the name Emmanuel now, or Theo. Theo's God, Emmanuel means God with us. Now we don't think they are Emmanuel, do we? But it reminds us of. That was what these passages were for. And yet, now that we have the revelation of God in Jesus, this backstory, as we look back, is absolutely filled with things that point to Jesus. And isn't it just so upside down and amazing that actually the one who was prophesied about really actually was those things that he prophesied for? So all I wanted to do with that was to give it back its original meaning. We still have ours, but it's important for us to recognise that that's not how it was first understood. But isn't it just amazing that actually this is the truth of this passage that couldn't have been seen before Jesus really rose from the dead, actually. This taps into the bigger story. So being born a virgin, as I said earlier, a new line in human history has been won. The introduction of someone who is not Adam enabled us to have a second go at being God's people. Jesus, the Messiah, would be the one who would crush the serpent's head that was talked about in Genesis 3:15. Jesus the Messiah would be the smasher of swords and he would bring peace. He would remove the bloodstained boots. He would be the remover of burdens and the bringer of joy and light. Also, we heard from this Isaiah reading that this Jesus, this Messiah, would be the one who would bring justice and righteousness. Just amazing. I've already briefly touched on this next passage about how the angel said to Mary, don't be afraid. And I think it's important for us as well to use the Christmas story to not be afraid. And how I think we can do that is by looking back and seeing how God was able to pull the threads of history from the Old Testament right to this birth. That he has time in his hand, that he is able to deliver his promises over the distance. So too the promises from Jesus onwards to us, that he's able to pull the threads that we can be found in the story. Sometimes we might not know how in God's tapestry we fit. Sometimes we're not sure of the picture that's being
put together. But let me tell you that God absolutely knows, and that He wants to weave your life into His big story. And this story revolves around this baby that came, who lived and died and rose again, and now is seated at the God's right hand in glory and honour. Just got one more thought before we finish. And I'd heard years ago that one of the talk show hosts from America, Larry King, had said he was asked if he could interview one person and ask one question, who would it be? And he said it was Jesus. And he wanted to ask if he really was virgin birth. And I thought, maybe you should be asking Mary that. But his point was that if we get the answer to that question, if Jesus really is virgin birth, then it puts so many things on the table. It puts miracles on the table. It puts God in the life of Jesus. So therefore, his teachings you'll pay attention to. The miracles you won't discount. The resurrection is on the table. The forgiveness of sins is on the table. That in all of these stories, but particularly in the virgin birth, if this story is true, it opens up the possibility for all of them. And I would argue the similar sort of thing with the resurrection, or actually any miracle. If any miracle is proven, then it opens up the door for all the others. I pray that this Advent time, as we lead up to Christmas, that we will open our hearts and minds to all God's miracles, but particularly this miracle of Jesus, who is God's King and Messiah, but in fact God Himself. That this story will be our story too. And that we'll find our identity and our hope in being attached to Him. God be praised. Amen.